Podcast World 9-8. I am your host this week, Sage Samarage Morris Green. With me, as always, we have Robert Desert Eagle Allen. We have Sean Nola Kirkland. And we have Mr. Blue Swim, who showed up just in the nick of time. Everybody say hi.
Hey! Hi.
Hello.
Sean, tell us what you're drinking.
I'm drinking Red Bull, so I'm not sleepy sounding.
Uh-oh.
Because apparently everyone complained, and I want everyone to be nice to Sean and not complain, because I think he's a bomb diggity host. Thank you very much. Plus, he has a cute dog, as some of you may have noticed.
Yes.
And I wanted to give a shout-out to everybody who then posted, followed someone's request for us to post our pet pictures, and then followed that up with all of their pet pictures. Everyone's pets are adorable.
Even that hamster, Aerith.
And I liked Hyrule's pets when he said that they were getting along for once. His pets, whose names I'm forgetting, but he is a cute cat and a cute puppy. Angel and Max, that's their names.
But did all you see of them my Max?
I did see your Max. Your Max is also cute. All of the animals are really cute. We did not get any mean, derpy-looking animals. It was nice.
We are the mean, dirty-looking animals.
We are the mean, dirty-looking animals. Anyway, this week, we're going to open it up with some very brief but very informative Vita roundtable talk. But we're going to keep it under 15 minutes because Deagle has some amazing information for us. Share with us, Deagle.
I'm not sure if it's amazing. But,
no pressure, though.
Yeah. Well, anyway, there's about a month until the Sony Vita hits shelves. And I wanted to just, I don't know, have a brief roundtable on the portable and hopefully sidestep some of the unsubstantiated kind of negativity that has plagued the system as of late in the media and in the podcasting world. And that's not to say this is going to be a Vita circle jerk, but
it's taking me such stony fanboys. Except for Vita being Xbox.
One of the things I want to do, though, is give kind of support for our opinions when possible. So let's start things off with the hardware itself. Now, I know three of us had a hands-on with I believe, was the final build. Now, one of the things is Sony is a hardware company, and despite some of the launch setbacks with the PSP, you know, there were some dead pixels here, and I think in Japan they had that twist-and-pop syndrome, where if you twisted the PSP, the UMD would shoot out. But even when it came out, the system's capabilities were just really unrivaled for a portable system. You know, 2005, what was going on? There was, I think there were fourth generation iPods, and, you know, they were still using hard drives and they weren't, capable of playing video. And here comes the PSP, which offers, you know, games, music, video, just on all in one really slick system. And despite some reports of, you know, some early hardware setbacks, I know GPD's Vita seems to go to sleep on him at random for like half a day. I think the functionality and the build quality of the system appears to be, you know, as cutting edge as the PSP was in 2005, which really reflects Sony's experience as a hardware manufacturer. So not even talking about software. So from you guys, I know Sage, Sean, you had a little hands-on time. Agree, disagree? What's your thoughts?
I definitely agree. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie and say that it's not my most anticipated thing of the year, because it is. I would just wish it had Monster Hunter. But, no, I thought it was great. I do want to correct you and say the one we used at E3, they said it was a little bit lighter than the final build because It didn't have. Not only did I have the battery, but it didn't have the battery mechanism. But,
okay.
It was essentially.
Similar. I didn't notice that because it was tethered down.
Yeah, I mean, it was really light, and they said there were a couple of little things like the material wasn't finalized. I guess it's going to have a slightly different texture, and the buttons aren't going to be quite as sticky. Is what they the guy was telling me. But yeah, I mean, it was the same size and shape.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I thought it was really smooth when I got to hold it. I don't know how the battery and material changes are going to affect that feel, but it definitely was the smoothest feeling handheld that I think I've ever picked up compared to, you know, anything else we saw at E3 and compared to anything else I've ever held. And it's a shame. In some ways, it's a shame that I was thinking how lucky GPD is because he gets his before, you know, we do because he's in Japan. But actually, I was reading and I saw that, like, you know, the second firmware update has come out and it fixes a bunch of bugs. And that's the one benefit to us getting it later, I think, is that a lot of those bugs that come out at first get sort of firmware update patched and fixed before we end up with them.
Right.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Now, I guess we all think the hardware is solid, but one of the things I think where Sony's catching a lot of flack, and they're really dropping the ball, is on marketing. Now, it's almost a given that day one hardware purchases are usually the hardcore types. But these same hardcore types are the ones that follow Sony's, you know, international campaigns, which online, you know, it's really easy to see what's going on, you know, follow GPD and, you know, other people over in Japan. So when we hear about Japan's, you know, their UMD passport program where Vita purchasers can pay, well, it's not really a nominal fee, but what they call a nominal fee, to receive the digital versions of their UMD games, and there's no accompanying news on this side of the world, I think that might cause a bit of hesitancy. And kind of the same goes for PS1 titles. They haven't announced, but they haven't denied whether those are going to be playable on the Vita. Thoughts on that?
I can't tell if Sony is a little bit hesitant and cautious now, just with everything that's happened this year. Mm-hmm. With the PSN network,
we're looking a month away, and we still don't know whether there's going to be a passport program.
I guarantee you there won't be a passport program.
At all?
It's just not something that would ever catch on in the U.S. You're telling someone that they'll get $5 off a game, and these people will really feel entitled to get it for free. And it would just mm-hmm. it would be more negative press that they don't need.
Mm-hmm. You know, in a world 10 years ago where we weren't online, we weren't seeing everything that Japan's doing. But now there's this notion, well, Japan has that. Why aren't we getting that?
Well, we're not getting that because we'll complain about it. I mean, it's entirely a marketing move. They did it in Japan because they would be grateful for it, and they won't do it here because a few people will use it and the rest of the people will complain, well, I already own this game. Why are you making me pay for it again?
Do you think there'll be a media backlash?
There will be media backlash either way. I think there will be less media backlash of us not getting it because mm-hmm. I think that when the launch happens, people will be focused on the system itself and the games that come out for it. And it'll kind of just – the fact that something isn't there will kind of just get washed up in all the other stuff.
Mm-hmm. Now, is it just $5 discount or thereabouts?
It's up to the publisher. So it's depending on what the publisher decides is to A, whether or not they want to participate with the program at all, and B, how much they want to price the game afterwards. But none of them, I think, offer the game outright for free.
Right.
You know, if they brought it here and made it, you know, $5 to $10 at the most, you know, per game to export, that wouldn't be that awful because I mean, a lot of people buy their games used, a lot of people don't pay full price for their games, so it wouldn't be that much of an extra charge, really.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, let's say what they're trying to avoid is, let's say you buy a Vita and your friend has a library of UMDs. You're just going over to their house saying, "Hey, you don't have a Vita, but I would like to have all these digitally. Let me borrow your collection so that I can have my own, like, have a jump start on my collection and not have to pay for it."
And kind of like the same reason why installed games on the Xbox 360 still require the disc.
Yeah.
Yep. Now, one thing we've discussed before I want to move on is I still have not seen a Vita ad. I haven't seen any kiosk. I mean, this thing feels like it's not really coming out February 22nd and a week early for people that buy the package. I mean, beyond the mall tour, Sony hasn't pushed this in the least. How devastating will this be, do you think, to the initial sales?
I'm interested to see the detriment, but I think part of why Sony isn't doing more advertising is that they're kind of an arrogant company. They're pretty confident in the quality of their stuff in general, and I think that has shown up sort of throughout their, like, at the, you know, the things they do at E3, at the products that they release. I don't think they do, I mean, they obviously usually do more advertising than they're doing now, but I think that they are probably going for, like, the mystery route, because I think that they're arrogant enough to think that they can get away with it that people will buy it anyway. And even if they don't, like, jump on it right away, they can start marketing after it's released, because probably enough people are, like, ready and, you know, anticipating its release that they're actually going to show up and get it. And then if sales aren't as high as they want it, they'll just, they'll do more advertising then.
I think marketing's going to learn a lesson like we did from the, you know, Saturn launch. It's in stores now kind of thing. They're going to go back and say, geez, remember when there was no push behind the Vita?
Yeah, but the problem with the Saturn release was that they told developers, hey, this is coming out at the end of the year, and then they released it, and so there were months and months where there were no games. At least the developers know to make games for it.
No, but I meant as a memorable kind of marketing thing. We still talk about it later.
Yeah.
What a surprise it was. And I think this will be as remarkable, the time that there wasn't much of a push behind it.
I think,
I know Taco Bell is going to be doing a promotion with the Vita where if you buy like one of those $5 burrito boxes or something like that, you can get a code that you can enter online and you could win a Vita, or you do some sort of a game that's on iOS and you could possibly win a Vita and stuff like that. They're basically doing what Burger King did, I think, both with the 360 and with the Kinect a couple of years ago. Okay.
Yeah, but there's not going to be any Taco Bell game for the Vita like there was for the 360.
Three games.
That's so gross.
Sneak King.
Whatever. Sneak King was a legitimately fun game.
Bumper.
It was.
No, it was awful. You guys are wrong on that one.
It was fun in one of those awful sort of ways. It's a technical nightmare, but at the same time, it's just
whatever. It was
so
$5.
Awesome.
It was $5.
The series got progressive.
And garbage is free, and that doesn't make it worth it.
I was so good. But I was going to say, I wouldn't be surprised to see some sort of strategy where they do a soft launch, let it kind of leak out into the, into the public, and then really push it hard at the holiday season. My critique of that sort of situation is I would make it an even softer launch and make it sort of this mythic thing that only exists. I think I said this in the last podcast too. You know, launch it in major cities and then kind of let it leak out that way.
The NES did that.
Yeah.
The NES did that. I remember going to like Macy's and seeing the NES with Rob the Robot and all these different things. And it was only available, I think, San Francisco, New York, maybe LA. So, I don't know, that worked.
Definitely a clever strategy.
Let's talk about the launch library. First-party titles brought up the list. Going to read this Micro Machine style. We got Escape Plan, Hot Shots Golf, World Invitational, Hustle Kings, you got to get your pool on, Little Deviants, Mod Nation Racers, Super Stardust, Delta, Uncharted, Golden Abyss, and Wipeout 2048. Third-party, we got Army Corps of Hell, Asphalt Injection. Who wants an Asphalt Injection? Ben 10 Galactic Racing, Blaze Blue, Continuum Shift Extend, Dungeon Hunter Alliance, Dynasty Warriors Next, F1 2011, FIFA Soccer, Lumines, Michael Jackson, Plants and Zombies, Rayman Origins, Shinobito, Tales of Space, Mutant Blobs, Touch My Katamari, Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3, Virtua Tennis 4. Now,
Was Ridge Racer on there?
No, Ridge Racer is coming out after. Now here's my problem. I think with hardcore players, we've all played a majority of the titles already. I mean, my most anticipated titles coming out after launch, Disgaea 3, and Hot Shots, I've played before. I played Hot Shots for at least 20 minutes at E3, and I was talking to Shipwreck this week, and I couldn't tell Shipwreck with absolute certainty whether this was an entirely new game or a port of the PS3 title. For me, it's a little strange that for years gamers have asked for the PSP or another PSP iteration to have another thumbstick to play first-person shooters. And it's like they finally heed that advice, and there's not a single first-person shooter in sight.
Well, I think they
could have ported, one, even, you know, something from the library.
What about Killzone? Killzone's coming out close to launch.
It's not indicated as a in the launch window.
I thought it was. Maybe it got pushed back.
Right. But
now,
it
may not be a first-person shooter, but what about Uncharted? Don't you think that's going to make decent use of the second control stick?
Yeah, I think so. There's a lot of, you know, touch thing, but
it might be a safe bet for them. I mean, the 3DS coming out, most of it was not anything like super significantly new. So maybe they thought, you know, we could just do a bunch of ports and not release a bunch of new games and save the new games for launch sort of after the Vita's already come out.
But it's almost all ports.
Yeah. No, I know. I mean, I don't know that I think that's the best strategy, but that might have been their thought process was, well, this will work fine.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not so much what the library is, it's how little we've seen of the library. Like, you just listed off a huge list of games, most mm-hmm. of which I have barely seen any media for. Sure. You know, Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3 I've seen a lot of, Uncharted I've seen a lot of, Wipeout I've seen a lot of. Other than that, I haven't seen a lot of any of that since E3. You know, Little Deviants was pretty hot at E3, but what have you really seen about it since then?
Mm-hmm. Not much.
I don't know. It just seems interesting. I remember when the PS2 launched, there were articles every month in every magazine of, you know, look at Kessen. This is going to be so, oh my God, Dark Cloud's going to be so cool. And even though it had like a really small library of games at launch, you knew a lot about every single one of those games and you wanted them. Right. And this one, it's just.
I even bought Fantavision.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I mean, there were articles about Fantavision talking about how cool it was going to be. And now it's, you know, Uncharted Golden Abyss, that is out in Japan. I still don't know that much about it.
Right. Yeah, I was just thinking that same thing. It was like, do they have the voice actors? Did they do the same mocap thing that the Uncharted games are known for?
I have no idea. I mean, I know it's different studios, so I'm sure it's going to have different stuff. And I mean, I have played a couple seconds of it from back at E3 a long time ago. But, it's, I mean, I really don't know much about it. And it's weird that it's launching, and I know zero about any of those games except for Marvel vs. Capcom 3. Yep. Well, so, Capcom, good for you for trying to save Sony's butt.
You know, I mean, from what I've seen of the Vita's lineup, you know, both on GameStop and just what I've been paying attention to here and there, I mean, some of my most anticipated titles are like, you know, Disgaea, which is on a, yep. which I could just get on the PS3, and Persona 4, the, mm-hmm. I can't remember what the new, it was a Persona 4 HD or something to that effect. And I already have Persona 4. And, I mean, I can already just go play it on my PS2. Of course, I could do the same thing with Persona 3 on the PSP, well, but I mean, that's not something you'd, I bought the system
to pay. You're paying $40 or... however you judge a $290 convenience fee to take it on the go with you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and for me, that's...
because, you know, I play a lot of games on commute time.
Yeah, I was going to say, for me, that's worth it, because mm-hmm. I would say that I play more games on my commute than I play at home now.
You know, but I wonder if there's a lot of people out there like us, Sean, or where...
Not in the U.S.
Not in the U.S.,
yeah. Yeah, okay. Trying to get people to commute here is like pulling teeth. Everybody talks like, oh my God, I can't believe you ride the train in L.A. People must murder you all the time.
See, that's so foolish. I being not an L.A. native and therefore just like, you know, 95% of everybody who's like, oh God, riding the, you know, I'm not used to riding there at all. And I rode the public transportation all the way from Venice Beach to L.A. the entire time I was there for E3. And it was fine. Like, normal people ride public transportation because it's normal people who can't afford to commute all the time. That's who rides public transportation.
Yeah.
And occasionally you get a crazy person, but I have found there is quite a clear code of ethics for crazy people riding public transportation, and they generally leave you alone because that's part of the code.
Yeah. Just don't make eye contact.
Don't talk.
No, they like that.
Sage.
I'm sorry, I forgot. Okay, moving on, because I said I would keep us to a limit. That was 15 minutes. We're going to move on from Vita talk and into the rest of the podcast. So, Deagle.
Yes.
Been playing.
I thought that was fun, by the way. First up, Oddworld Stranger's Wrath HD. Yeah, that was one of my favorite titles from the Xbox, regular Xbox generation. And one of the things I liked about it, unlike, I did like the previous entries in the series, but I thought that the change to, you know, third-person action with a little bit of the stealth angle really made Stranger's Wrath enjoyable. One of the things I thought, because, yeah, the walking around, you know, with the guy to fart to communicate and stuff, that was fun, but it just wasn't as visceral. And sadly, I don't think the game got the recognition it deserved. It was, you know, really creative, really fun. So in case you haven't played the original, you play this gravelly voice, probably supposed to be Clint Eastwood, bounty hunter, and he uses live bait to capture or to kill foes. And more than just shooting, you attack foes, using, you know, things like skunks to induce, you know, vomiting in a range in a specific area. There's spiders to kind of tie them up with webbing, you know, temporarily. There's a chipmunk to lure them into certain areas. And I remember it was one of the first console shooters that I played that really encouraged you to kind of prioritize your targets. You would lure them into corners and usually try to avoid, you know, a real simple run and gun approach. And I'm sure, you know, if you were really good, you could play the game that way, you know, simple run and gun. But it was much more satisfying to kind of pick them up and hunt them down one by one. And with this, I know most HD conversions these days are kind of half-assed, like the Splinter Cell collection that came out for PS3. You know, it took out the whole multiplayer, which was just really pissed me off. And, it couldn't seem to find... Yeah, the Spies versus Mercs was really hot. It couldn't seem to handle a consistent frame rate, but just add water. They really gave this game the royal treatment. I mean, from the cinematics, it looked like they redid them. I don't have the original version to compare it to, but, you know, it really looks like they redrew a lot of the assets, the textures. There's a lot more polygons. They upped the frame rate. It's almost always 60 frames per second. Now, there's the occasional wonky bit, like when you're getting out of water. Every once in a while, the bounty hunter can get kind of stuck. But the game plays and really looks like a modern game, and it has enough nuance to satisfy, you know, contemporary gamers. A couple weeks ago, I said I wasn't really feeling Halo Anniversary because I thought the mechanics, you know, I played so many first-person shooters since then that it was so many steps back for me. But this one, I didn't feel that at all. Right now, I believe it's $10.49 for PS Plus subscribers, and I think well worth the cash. Regular price is $15. I'd pay it. Really fun game. And anyone who, you know, wants something a little different from a first and third person action game should check it out.
Cool.
Did you guys ever play it?
I did not.
I have not played that one.
Shame on you and shame on you.
I was in
the camp. I played Odyssey, but that was about it.
Yeah, this is totally different. You know, more of a straight up action, you know, first person shooter game there.
I was in the camp of what did they do to the Odyssey series when Munch came out, and so I was so upset, and when they added this other non-Abe game, I was done. I didn't even give it a second thought.
But it's nice to hear that it played well and that it was successful.
No, I've heard nothing but good things about it, but it's all been in retrospect. Like, at the time, I heard almost nothing about it, and I
totally
pretty much actively ignored it.
Yeah.
And I heard that was not wise.
Change your way, Sean. The other thing I've been
playing... How much is the download
version? It's $14.99 if you don't have PS Plus, and $10.49 for PS Plus subscribers. So, you know, $10 for that game is a deal. I think it's about 2.5 gigs. Pretty good size. The other thing I've been playing a lot of, Zen Pinball 3D for the 3DS I mentioned last week, and man, I really like this game. And a really good conversion. On the advice of one of our readers, I apologize for not having your name handy, but you know who you are. I picked up Pushmo, which is the Nintendo-published puzzler that's also in the eShop and the other kind of hot title on there. The hook to this one is you can push and pull these giant shapes in and out of the environment, up to three spaces, you know, on the ground. And so your goal is to create this staircase that your character can climb up, and you want to reach the top and rescue this trapped little character. And so you manipulate these things as you're climbing them. And it's not far removed from Catherine. It's got, you know, 200 different levels, and I'm not even close to finishing yet. And, you know, it has the ability to make your own levels, and you can share them versus the QR codes. There's user-generated levels that are based on, you know, Mega Man, Donkey Kong, some of the guy from Cave Story, Advance Wars, I mean, you name it. My only wish is that you could share designs via StreetPass, but other than that, it's really ingenious and, you know, well-polished little puzzler. $6.99, I think, and have a lot of fun.
Now, speaking of Catherine, because I loved it when it came out, and I really wanted to be able to go back and play it, and I thought that I would, because it has so many opportunities for, like, changes in the storyline, and I have never gotten around to playing it again, and I think that to the credit of certain critiques about it, that does have something to do with the fact that it's one very specific sort of puzzle, and that if that's not your cup of tea, maybe the storyline isn't quite enough to pull you back into it over and over again. Have you played it multiple times?
No, I keep, much like you, I keep meaning to go back. I said, today I'm going to go back to Catherine because I really enjoyed it. I like the puzzle and I like the story.
Yeah.
But both of those things worked. I think if one of those things works for you and not the other, then Catherine may not have worked, but both of them just kind of hit for me.
But I'm saying, I think even if they do work for you, it's sort of a hard game to get back into a little bit, I think.
Yeah, I could see that.
Which is unfortunate, because I do think it's a really good game, but I have noticed it's a little difficult to pull yourself back.
It was just a little daunting because...
Aren't most games like that, though? I mean, if you put some games down for, you know...
No.
2-3 weeks or a month, it's like sometimes it's hard to remember where you are in the story, and then, you know, you kind of think, screw it, so I'll just play it again sometime in a couple of months or whatever.
On the level I played Catherine at, I ran into a little bit of frustration, some of the, climbing block stages there, and so I defeated it, but that memory of, I got a little frustrated, I think that may be the one thing that's keeping me, that's prohibiting me from jumping and back in.
And what's sad is they made it easier for us Americans.
Yeah.
And it's definitely... But, Blue, to answer what you were saying, I don't think so, because I definitely have games where, like, I'll pick them up over and over again. Like, Bioshock, I pick up again all the time. Splinter Cell, the good ones, I pick up again all the time.
How often do you pick it up? I mean, if you have a backlog, it'll be, 3-4 months, if not more, before you go back to something. And then it's like, oh, what the fuck was I doing?
Sean, what was I playing this week?
You were playing Front Mission Evolved.
I saw that for like $10 over a GameStop.
It's not a terrible game. It's average.
Stunning review. It's not terrible.
I wanted some Mech on Mech action, and that was the first thing that I saw. So
You get a little overwhelmed by how many guns you have at some point, but it's not bad. I will say I got to the last boss in that game right before my first PlayStation died, and never revisited it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So last thing, let me finish up here, round it out. Last thing for me, kind of a weird pick, was I was playing some Lego Pirates of the Caribbean for 3DS.
I got that too.
Yeah, I have picked it up because I wanted to see if the Lego engine was improved from the Lego Star Wars 3 title, which it hasn't. It's a slowdown, and there's these cinematics, which they seem to interrupt the game at really weird times, which I don't think was felt the same way on console. The translation from, I had the Pirates, I reviewed that on console. The 3DS, it follows the emphasis of Star Wars, where there's more of a puzzle aspect and there's less combat. And it's a lot more, collect the, what are they called? Collect the studs there. So I don't know. Still, I'm glad to see 3DS games selling for $20 right now, which is about the right price for it. I wouldn't pay a penny more for it. But, it's got the music. It's got the Lego kind of feel. But, not the best port I've ever seen.
Yeah, I think they've got the same problem that Telltale has, where they've got this engine, and it's really cheap to make stuff with that engine, and it's outlived its usefulness now in our eyes, but as long as they can keep putting stuff out for cheap and making just enough money, they're going to keep doing that.
Yep.
Indefinitely. Which I guess, it's not, though, in these trying times, I'm glad that they figured out a way to keep themselves profitable.
Yeah.
I just hope that these trying times end sooner rather than later, because I would like for both of those companies to do something new.
Yeah.
Totally.
Can't argue that.
What's a franchise that could really benefit from the Lego license that hasn't already gotten it?
Monopoly.
Mass Effect.
Lego Monopoly.
Gears of War.
Oh, God. That would be unique.
Well, the thing about it is you can't do any titles that are too close to what they already have. I mean, I guess they haven't really done a hard fantasy setting yet, and that's kind of like Lego's roots, so that's kind of surprising.
Have they done like a Lord of the Rings or something? Why don't they do Lord of the Rings?
That totally makes sense, and yeah. Warner They have the Warner properties because they got Harry Potter, and Warner has the rights to.
And they have DC. Oh, I'm sure they'll do a DC Universe since those toys are selling so well. The DC Universe Legos.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't there going to be like some DC Heroes or something in the next Lego Batman game or something?
Well, that's what I'm saying. They made the toy line. There's a spinoff of the Batman license that's got like Superman and I think Hawkman and Wonder Woman and stuff like that. And they're selling. They're selling really, really well. It's one of their best-selling sets in the past couple of years, so I'm sure that'll turn into a game.
Can I pull a Adam Tide Yermalecki?
Yeah, sure.
I also forgot to mention Pixel Junk. It's the most one. Pixel Junk side-scroller, which I played. And it was I'm having a great time with that, and I remember some of the reviews that it was like super short or full of bullshit.
I almost played that last night, but then I played Starhawk because, oh my god, Starhawk.
Tell me about Starhawk, Sean.
Yes, please do.
Or Chicken Hawk.
So you remember Warhawk and how awesome that was?
Yeah, it was. It was excellent. Loved it.
It's better. Except for...
No.
Okay, well, let me start with the good. So the beta has two areas, one in space and one in, like, the deserty landscape-y place. And basically it's a third-person shooter, just like Warhawk was, where you can hop in vehicles. The vehicles are... you got like a Jeep, and the Hawks from the first game are now transforming almost Veritech fighter sort of things. So they're jets, and then they're walkers, or actually vice versa, because when you build them, they're walkers, and then you transform into jets. They're jump packs. And there's something else, but I don't remember what it was, because I mostly just stuck to the Jeep or on foot. But basically the big change in this one is it's about base building. So you go out and you collect resources, and it's just one type of resources, this little energy ball that you collect. And then anyone at any time can build, a landing pad to build Hawks, or a garage to build Jeeps, or these little jump pack things, or pylons that... Basically, a pylon will give you area that your team controls. And the reason that's important is whenever you spawn, you can spawn anywhere on the map that your team controls. So what ends up happening is you have people that, even though there aren't classes, they sort of fill out those class roles. So, you know, you might be a scout, and then your job is to go out, find a place that you don't control yet, plop a pylon down, and make it so that, you know, people can spawn in there and move forward more quickly. Or you might be more of a saboteur and start going after other people's bases and taking those out. You might be, you know, a pilot. You just hop in a Hawk and fly around.
So the bases, they pump out the vehicles, kind of like an RTS?
Sort of, yeah. And vehicles take resources, too. So, like, you don't get a lot of resources. I think the most resources you can have is, like, 12 units. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, most vehicles cost a unit. Pylons cost 4 units to build. You know, supply, whatever, where you get your weapons, that cost, like, 6. So it's, like, you kind of have to be communicating with people, like, hey, I'm going to build something. Don't start building a whole bunch of tanks because no one's going to pilot them, and I need to build, you know, a forward base. I need those resources.
Are any of the vehicles AI controlled, or are they?
No. It's entirely just a multiplayer game. So okay. you can build all the Jeeps you want, but if you don't have the people to pilot them,
okay.
It's too bad.
Sucks for you.
And that kind of seems to be an issue because it is a PS3 game, so nobody wears headsets. So that can be an issue sometimes. The other issue I had was you can tear a base down that's one of yours, and you'll get resources from it. Mm-hmm. But when you do that, you basically walk up to the computer and every piece of the base, and it'll say hold square to reclaim whatever type of building it is. And you see that, and there's no tutorial in the beta, so you see reclaim, and you go, oh, no, the enemies have stolen part of our base. I better reclaim that. And then you've torn down a building. And everybody does that the first time you come in. So you'll have some sort of strategic location. Somebody will spawn in, land next to it, and go, oh, crap, we need to reclaim this important pylon that's starting our forward base. And then they'll tear it down, and then you have to go all the way, like, recover all that progress. So that's frustrating. The other frustrating thing is the weapon changing in that is so weird. Like, you'll pick up a gun and it'll flash up really quick which button it's assigned to, and then you have no way of referencing that without changing weapons. And that sounds really nitpicky, but it's really frustrating, because I'll pick up weapons and have no idea what I just picked up, and I'll have to stand there and go through all eight positions to try and find where it assigned it to and what kind of weapon it is. So that is also frustrating. But it's a lot of fun. I really dig it. I'm really looking forward to the full release, because I played a lot of Warhawk. Yeah. I can see myself playing a lot of this, too.
Warhawk was awesome.
Warhawk was really awesome. This doesn't have as goofy of animations as Warhawk did. I like the sort of motorcycle physics on the guy running around in Warhawk, how he kind of leaned into all of his turns. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but this doesn't have that. They took it a little more seriously, I think. This one also promises to have a plot. It's not just bad guys versus good guys. But yeah, Starhawk. That is a good beta.
Is there another hawk that you've been checking out?
The chicken hawk? No, that's just Deagle being an asshole on the thing.
That's me.
Yeah, but I did.
But tell me about Blitz.
I was
really excited. I was hoping Chicken Hawk was like a new cool game. I was super stoked.
It stars Foghorn Leghorn and that little chicken hawk.
Exactly, that's what I was hoping for.
Yeah. I'm surprised he never got a game. That would have been a fun game on the Sega Genesis, right after Taz Escapes from Mars.
Yep.
No, I played Blitz, and I think I doomed the Saints, because I played Saints and 49ers and could not win, because I am terrible at Blitz, apparently, and then they lost. But Blitz is fun. I enjoy that a lot. It's weird, though, because it's really sterile. It doesn't seem like there's enough music in that game. And when there is...
Commentary, too.
Yeah. It's just there's... I don't know if it's just the sound design, but the whole thing just feels very barren at a lot of points. Mm-hmm. And I also don't like that they not only took out late hits, but any late movement whatsoever. So whenever you're down, everything just stops. Mm-hmm. And it's like... It still has the sort of break between plays that Blitz had to kind of catch your breath, but when you can't do anything, it just, I don't know, it feels weird.
Have you been able?
I think it was the NFL's doing, wasn't it?
Yeah, you can't have late hits.
Have you been able to kick a field goal?
Yes.
Wow, you are amazing, man. You are half robot. Whenever I bring that thing up, you know, it's a meter that moves from left to right.
Yeah, it goes.
That
super
thing
fast.
Is moving like 90 miles an hour.
Yeah,
and I shank it all the time. So I don't even try to kick field goals anymore.
I have gotten it. I have done some pretty ridiculous field goals in that game. But I mean, Blitz was the same way. That seems to be the only thing that I've retained. But I've yet to win a game, so I can't say that I'm good at Blitz.
Really?
Yeah, I'm just good at kicking field goals.
Did you crank up the difficulty or what?
No, I just, whatever the default settings are, it's just my Saints cannot overcome the 49ers.
Is that what you play always?
Maybe their stats are really low. I don't know. Yeah, it's Sean Nola. Of course he's going to be the Saints.
But always against the 49ers?
Because I wanted – this was I played entirely before they played the 49ers. But, yeah, I wanted them to win before they actually won in real life. But instead they just lost a bunch of times and then they lost in real life.
I mean, I'm so sorry for your loss. That's terrible.
It was a good game, though. The real-life one. None of my Blitz games were good games. They were all just me throwing ridiculous turnovers and losing by multiple digits.
I forget. Did you used to play with your brother?
In Blitz?
Yeah.
Yeah, both of my brothers. Okay. My little brother is probably one of the greatest Blitz players in the world.
Wow.
Yeah.
Big words.
He's right.
Yeah, one Thanksgiving we play, because that's kind of like a Thanksgiving tradition, is that we'll play Blitz 2000, I think, on N64. And my older brother actually beat him, and he got physically upset. Like, nobody beats him at Blitz, and my older brother and I are terrible at Blitz, and just the idea that one of us could beat him was just too much.
Too much.
Yeah, too much.
That was the bloody Thanksgiving.
I'm a little intimidated by people who are, like, nationally ranked at video games, because it means that either they're, like, fuck-off ridiculous good, or they just have so much free time to devote to that, which is something I can't really comprehend because I don't have that much free time to play games. So it's always, like, stunning to me that there are people that are that amazingly good at it.
Yep.
I mean, their hobby is very focused. But that's all I've been playing. So what has one of you guys been playing?
Blue, what you been playing?
Well, I have channeled my inner Blue Ranger, and I picked up ZHP Zetai Hero Project, Unlosing Ranger versus Dark Death, Evil Man, for the PSP. I've been toying with the idea of picking that thing up since I got my PSP. But every time I checked out gameplay videos of it, I couldn't quite connect with it. I really couldn't see what the big appeal of it was.
Did you listen to our old podcast episodes?
I haven't. I didn't go back and listen to the ZHP one.
It wasn't the ZHP one. It was like the ZHP 6, where Tidegear and Deagle just circle jerked about ZHP for months.
You know, this is going to be the circle jerk episode now.
Oh, gross. So we've got vagina lasers and circle jerking. We are losing status as a reputable podcast all the time.
I'll just replace it with something else.
Happy rainbows.
So tell me about ZHP.
Well, you know, I mean, like I said, it wasn't the kind of game where I would check out some videos on YouTube, and I just really wasn't connecting with me, but I still decided to pick it up anyways because GameStop had it for $20 new, of course it was a gut, and it's surprisingly not very easy to find.
Downloadable version. So you could play.
It was $10 more.
No, I picked it up. I got the DLC version, $15. It was a couple of weeks.
When was that? Because I checked it.
And I asked at a big sale online.
Oh, crap.
Maybe 20 tops.
Yeah, because when I checked it out. Anyway, yeah. But should I do a plot summary for in case some people don't know what that is?
Sure.
Basically, you have Dark Death Evil Man, which looks kind of like another universe version of Goldar from the original Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And he's getting ready to have the final battle with the Unlosing Ranger. And the Unlosing Ranger is apparently late, and he's not looking where he's going, and he's rushing to the fight. And he gets hit by a car and dies. And he bestows his Morpher Belt to a random bystander and basically makes him the Unlosing Ranger. Except, obviously, the bystander is not a trained superhero and gets killed almost immediately. And I say almost immediately because it takes like 2 or 3 hits to actually kill him as opposed to 1. And from there, basically you end up in this bizarro Earth.
Oh, yeah,
and
about the baby. And then a baby.
Oh, yeah, there's a super baby, which, let's see, I can't quite remember, it's born on a certain day, a certain month, and a certain year, and it'll save the universe or something like that, and the baby starts floating around, and, I mean, it's like crazy, goofy Power Rangers type shit going on here, and it is an NIS game, so you have a lot of personality to the characters and stuff like that, and when after you meet your demise, or your supposed demise, you end up in the Bizarro Earth, or Bizarro World, whatever, and that's when you start doing some dungeon crawling. And basically, every time you go through a dungeon, you'll level up, you know, 2-3 times, maybe a little bit more, depending on how well you do. And then when you clear the dungeon or die, basically you reset to level 1. But it improves your overall level, which increases your basic stats for when you go into a dungeon. And
it's like a
different way of...
It is. It's a total roguelike, yeah.
Right. Yeah. And the thing is I mean, the game does require a fair bit of level grinding, but it's not as bad as it is in some games because the dungeons are, even though you'll play the same level over again and over and over again, the dungeons are they're completely random. The layouts are completely random. So even though you'll play the same stage 10 times through, it won't feel like you're playing the same stage over and over and over again. Let's see. I'm checking my notes here. One of my favorite things is that in the game, basically you have, different places to go in the main base layout or whatever. And one of them is a house that you can use to store your items. If you die when you're in a dungeon, you lose all the items you're carrying, and you go back to the hub base. So basically, you can store your items in your house, and your house comes with a wife. Your wife is a Prinny.
Like a Prinny?
Yeah, like a
Prinny. It's a Prinny, dude. Okay. and when you walk up and speak to it for the first time, it says, "I'm the Prinny wife, dude." And I mean, that's
she's pretty expensive to keep.
Yeah, she looks like a designer handbag or something like that. It's like $2,000 or something to that effect.
What a joke.
And basically, if you don't contribute like household expenses, you know, by selling your items or finding loot or whatever, that little house will start getting into like a pretty bad state of disrepair. Like there'll be a giant hole in the fence and everything, and the entire house will look gray and run down and stuff like that. So that's a nice, nice little incentive to keep the finances flowing through your wonderful wife.
Just like real life.
Yeah.
Yes.
The thing I liked about it was the dialogue, kind of the push and pull dynamic between I forgot the girl's name. She's such
a Tranger?
Yeah, Tranger and the guy. She's such a pessimist and everything. She's like trying to debunk all the like hero motifs and the motivational talk that the guy gives. And I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I need to pick that up one of these days. Everything everybody tells me about it says I would like it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a dungeon crawling Disgaea. I mean, it's the action isn't.
Ooh, now all of a sudden I don't want to play it.
John, I hate you.
I mean, it's the action is real time as opposed to turn-based SRPG gameplay, and that's one thing that
No, it's not.
It's not?
No, it's turn-based.
Well,
it's roguelike.
Yeah, I guess it's.
Oh, every time you take it's roguelike. Every time you take a turn, the enemies move. They see you, but it's not action based at all.
Well, I guess not. It's.
I mean,
you can
take forever to take a step.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's true. I guess it feels more actiony than Disgaea does. I guess.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, it's.
Sounds pretty.
I mean, I'm enjoying it. I think I'm about 5 hours in. And I've done a fair amount of grinding, and there's another. Feature of the game is basically all the items you pick up, weapons, armor, stuff like that. If you take them to this body modification doctor's office, if you will, you can turn those items into stat bonuses. Certain items will increase your speed. Another will increase your like short range attack. And so basically you have this entire grid that looks like a human body, and only a small portion of it is available to start out with, and I haven't upgraded it so I can have more stats on there, but basically it's a nice way to modify the body and increase like certain stats if you wanted to cater to your style a little bit, you know, if you're more of a go right in, beat the crap out of somebody, you can load up on the attack stats and stuff like that, and there's some for speed and yada yada yada, but yeah, I mean, I'm like I said, I'm about 5 hours in, and I'm enjoying it. I mean, it's not the sort of game that really lends itself to gameplay videos. It's something you really need to pick up and sit down with to really get a firm grasp as to its appeal.
Right.
But
cool.
But yeah, the next thing. Yeah. Huh.
I said, yeah, it sounds pretty good.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, if you can find a copy for, I think GameStop has it for 18 or 20 bucks. I checked the PSN last night, so I must have missed out on the sale because it was back up to 30 when I checked. But yeah, I mean, it's at that price, it's a good recommendation because it's not very easy to find. Amazon, you'll have to go through the user, through the user marketplace to find a copy of it. They don't have any copies left in stock through Amazon itself anymore. Mm-hmm.
So what else have you been playing, Blue?
Another thing I've been playing is, I guess part two to the free guide story was after I picked up the guide, I went over to Best Buy and picked up Dissidia Duodecim or Dissidia 12 or however you wish to refer to it. God, Square Enix, come up with simpler titles. I picked that up with a $25 gift card that Best Buy gave me for canceling my Halo Reach and BioShock 2 limited edition orders from Black Friday.
Nice.
Well, there you go, Deagle. That's the answer to the Best Buy question.
Okay.
But yeah, I picked that up, and I mean, as good as the first Dissidia was, everything about Duodecim is much better. And the thing is, it has the original Dissidia story in it as well. I haven't gotten up to it yet, but, you know, of course, have the strategy guide, so you can know certain things ahead of time. Earlier this week, Best Buy did a $10 Final Fantasy game sale, and when I picked up Duodecim, it was still 20 bucks. So I, went and got the price adjusted and ended up picking up Final Fantasy IV, the Complete Collection, which was also 10 bucks. And this one has, this one's basically the, like the title says, it's a complete collection of Final Fantasy IV. It has redone graphics to a certain extent on the original Final Fantasy IV. It doesn't have the 3D graphics that the DS version had, but at the same time, it also has Interlude, which takes place between Final Fantasy IV and Final Fantasy IV The After Years, which is also included on the complete collection. And The After Years takes place 20 years after Final Fantasy IV.
Yeah, it was originally a cell phone game.
Yeah, and then it came to WiiWare, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't go into spoilers on that in case somebody else picked it up this week as well, and you might want to avoid the instruction manual, if you, going into that, because it will spoil the ending to a certain extent for Final Fantasy IV.
The instruction book does?
Well, yeah, because you figure that Final Fantasy, the After Years is like the 20 years later, and it deals with the after effects of
it. Right.
So,
okay.
In order to introduce that.
Slight spoiler warning on this. Basically, the After Years takes place with Cecil and, I believe, Rose's son. And I don't know his name, but...
The character's children. Jeez Louise.
Well, that's why I said spoiler warning.
Blue, say it now, and Sean will edit that out.
No. I can edit that out. But I was just saying I hadn't finished Final Fantasy IV.
Oh.
Wait. What? You didn't know?
No, I didn't.
Oh,
it's not a big deal. There's a reason I haven't finished Final Fantasy IV, and that's because I got bored with it.
I think I got bored with the DS version about 15 hours in, where you had to go into this cave and you can use certain weapons because it was magnetized or something like that.
That sounds familiar.
The last thing I've been playing this week, and I've only put it maybe about an hour or so into it, and that is Third Birthday.
Yes,
me too. It's like I saw it for $10 at GameStop, and I immediately went over and price matched it over at Best Buy. because it's a good thing I did, because the copy at GameStop that I saw didn't have a DLC token. With both Final Fantasy IV and Third Birthday, you get DLC costume codes for Dissidia Duodecim. For Final Fantasy IV, there's a different costume for Cecil, and with Third Birthday, you get Aya's costume for Lightning. And, you know, when I saw it at GameStop, that wasn't in the case, so I'm sure somebody swiped it.
Well, these usually they keep the stuff that's supposed to be in the case behind the counter with the disc.
Do they?
Yeah, that way people don't swipe it.
You guys didn't read the article.
Well, I read the article. I'm just saying, I'm just telling you what they're supposed to do. Third Birthday is good. I hate the story in that game. The story in that game is super poop, but the actual gameplay in that is fun. It's one of the few fun shooters on the PSP.
Yeah, I mean, I've, like I said, I've only put about an hour or so into it. I think I'm about halfway through the first chapter. There's like a chapter zero, and then there's chapter one, which takes place in a nightclub, and the Twisted basically open like a portal or something right above the stage and start, you know, grabbing people out of the audience, and blood is just raining from the roof. It is truly, truly disgusting. But the CG cutscenes that they put in it are really, really nice. And I'm going to, you know, after we finish recording, I'm going to hook my PSP up to my TV and check out some of those cutscenes, because they look really, really nice on that small screen.
It's just a shame that the plot that they're connected to is incredibly dumb. And I made the complaint about this before, where it does the thing where it reveals to you the big twist towards the beginning of the game, and then just all the characters in the game are too stupid to figure it out. Like, it's just so frustrating to me. And it's a game all about time travel, and they never do anything interesting with that. But
it's the overdive system. Yeah. That's not exactly the most compelling name I've ever heard for time travel either.
Yeah. But
speaking of ZHB, moving back, not that you guys go into PlayStation Home, but there's a Disgaea 4 lounge that's available now, and you can get a Losing Ranger jacket in there.
You know, PlayStation Home, every time I go in there, I'm surprised how many people really, really dig that. So, good for them.
Yeah. That's enough to lure me in.
Yeah, well, I had a good talk with one of my coworkers about it, because we were talking about...
about PlayStation Home?
Well, it turned into talking about PlayStation Home. We were actually talking about the Old Republic, mm-hmm. and we were talking about how because he used to work for he used to be in video games, mm-hmm. and he always has sort of very different takes on stuff than I think about. And he was talking about how going against World of Warcraft. Using a game similar to World of Warcraft, like Old Republic, is kind of a losing game, just because people who still play World of Warcraft don't actually play the game. They just have their meetings there. And he said, right. If you log on to World of Warcraft now, most of the discussions you'll hear about are people talking about Skyrim, because that's what they're actually playing.
It's turned into Second Life.
So it's just like Second Life with fantasy people.
Pretty much.
And a $15 a month subscription fee.
And he's saying that Old Republic will become just another hangout, kind of like World of Warcraft and Home. And I was like, it's really interesting that basically you're just segmenting groups of people into hangouts. And what he basically came down to was where Old Republic was in trouble was they're expecting people to spend a lot of money. Well, they spent a lot of money to create it, and then they're expecting people to shell out a lot of money for just another place they can hang out. And that is a space that's hard to... compete in, is the hangout space. But as far as the game space goes, those people are already playing other games. They're always playing other games. They just reconvene there to talk about them. And I thought that was a really interesting take, because I never really thought about that people who play WoW religiously are probably playing Skyrim, which they most certainly are. But
those guys that could play like 15 different, you know, WoW characters and basically run their own dungeon runs, it's not a wonder that they can then play like a few other games too. Did you guys ever see the photos of like the guys that had setups like that? Like, I don't know, the most impressive one was this guy. I think he could run somewhere
like
between 10. No, it was somewhere between 10 and 12, but he had like a computer for each one, and he had a screen for each one, and so he had it set up like something out of Lane, the anime where there's just screens everywhere. And he's just brilliant at, like, macro keying his, you know, his macro keys, and he knows how to. So the coolest thing was that he would just go run dungeon runs by himself with all of his characters, which, if you're a control freak and you know your characters really well, probably is more efficient in some ways than going in with a party of people, unless you guys are like
basically
a really
just
tight
playing
team.
Mass Effect or Dragon Age, because isn't that really all that's about? Is
well, kind of, but you have all these different characters with different skills that you're employing all simultaneously, and I think that's a bigger scale than Mass Effect, really.
That's what I'm saying about Dragon Age. Is that's exactly what you're doing. I'm just saying,
yeah,
there are games that do that, and he's wasting a lot of money on monthly subscriptions that way.
Well, that's true. I'm not saying I think this is a good thing people do.
Yeah, I've seen that guy too. It is pretty ridiculous. So what have you been playing?
Right along. According to Deagle, I have been playing, and I'm going to read these because I wish these were actual games. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Final Fantasy Chapter 13 Bankruptcy, and Ratchet and Case Law Out of Your Briefs. And I wish that these were real games, because that tickles me to no end. I have not been able to play many games this week. I have unexpected legal cases popped up. Not real ones, unfortunately, although someday that might be a more real excuse. So instead, I thought I would do a brief legal and otherwise update. By the time people hear this, they should probably all know this, but SOPA and PIPA, however you pronounce it, have both failed at this point. They did not make it through, and they're pretty much dead in the water. And basically because Wiki did their whole blackout thing, and because of that, and this is where I think it's significant, a bunch of people saw that it was blacked out and actually did call their, you know, their representatives in Congress and all of those things and said, what are you doing? You can't do this. And there was such a huge, like, overwhelming wash of those phone calls that they decided it wasn't worth passing at this point in time. So,
what about open? Tell me
what about what?
Open.
Open?
Yeah.
Which one's that?
Daryl Issa, the guy behind that sponsored the bill. Now he's pushing open. I don't know what it's
I'm like. Sure it will fail to think, because the general comment from the House was that all of these types of bills, they're not going to try and push through. At the very soonest, they'll try it after the election, after they see who gets into office.
See, when I heard about he had something ready to go, it was almost like, okay, these are sent to die. That way we can, you know, push this slightly less, you know, sinister bill.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
When did you hear that? Because this
tonight,
information...
Evening.
Oh, I got it tonight, too. So I'm not sure, but my guess would be, and my advice would be for all of you listening, and then, Sean, you can say whatever you're going to say, is that the point is that, like, you do still have a voice. You do have a voice. We just have a much bigger country. We have a much bigger government. We have more people. So if you want your voice to have meaning, you have to actually make the effort, the, like, five-minute effort to look up your Congress representative, your Senate representative, and call them. But the House has made it, has, like, created, without knowing it, a pretty clear message that if they get a huge, overwhelming, like, input of, no, we don't want this, they won't pass it. And your voice still counts. And that's a really cool thing. So if this new bill comes up then, and it's crappy, and it's still crappy, even if it's like less crappy than the other ones, then call your representative and tell them, like, hey, the internet's important to me, and this is crappy, and please don't pass this.
I will say, though, this is sort of an open critique to everybody who, you know, did protests and whatever, you know, good for you. But I had a really difficult time finding out what SOPA was about. Just because there was, once people made a big deal out of, we don't support SOPA, and, you know, this is what we're doing to show that we don't support SOPA, is that if you looked it up, you really had to dig to find anything explaining what it was. I knew a lot of people who didn't agree with it. I knew a lot of people who did agree with it. I couldn't find a lot of people telling me why they had either position, and I couldn't find a lot of articles telling me what it was. And
right.
I think people need to be aware. I mean, this isn't just for SOPA and PIPA and Open and all that stuff, but any sort of large internet movement like that, people need to be aware of, I don't want to just agree with people I like. I want to be educated about what the issue is. And I can say it was really off-putting for me, and I wanted to just kind of give up and be like, whatever. I'm not just going to agree with Joystick just because I like Joystick.
No, that's true. I mean, you should totally inform yourself. I completely agree with you. I think that people should not just decide to jump on a bandwagon, for sure. That's a problem.
I can't remember where this took place, but I know there was an article where several gaming editors, I think including Jim Sterling from Destructoid, got together, and I guess they were discussing it in text form or something like that, or writing their own columns on it. And, you know, it takes stuff like that to really, I guess, understand what's going on with it.
Well, most of the articles I read, though, it didn't help me understand much. They just gave me a lot of hyperbole. Like the oatmeal, I think, is the best exaggeration of that, where he's like, here's a picture of Oprah Winfrey on a jet ski with Jesus, and if SOPA passes, I won't be able to do this because I don't have the rights to it. And I'm like, well, Oprah Winfrey is not copyrighted material, and that clearly falls under parody, so I don't think you're in any sort of danger of legal action at that point.
Wait, were they being serious?
Yeah, that was their blackout.
I thought that was a joke.
No, that was their blackout today. Was it, don't support?
Are you sure that wasn't sarcasm?
I had never heard about meal until today, so it's funny that you're bringing that up.
Oh,
but
really?
I think that the reason that came up is because Viacom had pretty much announced that they were gonna shut down YouTube because the way that the bill was written, that SOPA anyway, I think Pippa was a little less offensive this way. But the way that SOPA was written was that if a company was found to be in violation, the offended company could shut them down. Like, under SOPA, the way it was written, they could shut them down and make them not exist anymore and charge them a bunch of money.
No. Wait. The part I read was they couldn't have them shut down. What they could do is they could alert any advertisers and tell the advertisers to pull advertising dollars from them.
One of them was that they could shut the company down because they would be violating the bill, and the bill, SOPA or whatever, was that if you violated this, you are subject to being shut down. And so then there wouldn't be a
pulling venue. Advertising, pulling funding is effectively shutting a company down.
That too. Anyway, you have a voice, use it. That's the point of that. Also, Dust Force is coming up. I will be playing that, and I will be giving you guys a review, so look forward to that. And, Sean, you remember Just In Case, right?
Yes.
Well, I guess his friend made Hero Academy, which is free right now for smartphones. So, and Penny Arcade did a cartoon about it.
I saw that today.
Yeah, his friend is Shovan Patel. But anyway, so I'm hopefully going to put that on my smartphone and play it, but it's free, so if you don't want to wait to hear what I think about it, you could get Hero Academy on your phone, and you can tell me what you think about it, and that would be a nice turnaround.
Yeah,
and that's all the news.
Justin's really cool, and one time, he's more of Sage's friend than my friend, and one time I invited him to a party at my house, and I was drunk when he got there, and I introduced him to everybody at the party as my Asian twin, and I never heard from him again.
Wait,
I think
his name is Just In Case?
Yeah.
Really?
That's awesome.
Yeah, his parents
thought
that was funny. How did you introduce him? Here's my friend, Just In Case.
No, I just said, this is Justin, my Asian twin. And then I stole his pirate shirt.
That he was offended by that. I think that probably I wasn't around much anymore, and that was probably why you never heard from him again.
Never heard from him again.
I'll tell him you're sad about that.
I miss you, Asian twin.
I'll make sure he finds out. Anyway, I think with all of that aside, we should probably check out our interview.
Yes.
Because I'm looking forward to that.
Let's hear from Jairo Silva, In Exile Entertainment's employee, who's going to talk about Choplifter HD. Desert Eagle here with Jairo Silva from In Exile Entertainment, here to talk about the recent release of Choplifter HD. Welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, Robert, thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, thank you for coming on. Now, before we get into the game's nuts and bolts, I wanted to talk about the development process and to use a little pun here, how the revitalization of Choplifter got off the ground. Now, did you guys secure the IP rights first and then start working on the game, or were you working on a game, say, inspired by the original?
Well, you know, here at InXile, we're actually a bunch of, you know, bunch of gamers. Mm-hmm. So we've got a long history of, you know, games that each one of us has made and contributed to the company as a whole. And when we saw the opportunity for a game such as Choplifter and saw the IP was available, we knew we wanted it. We knew that we actually, being fans of the game and having played it as children and growing up on it, we took the opportunity and saw that it was available and picked it up and wanted to go crazy with it.
Right. So you guys were all fans of the original, played the original on Apple or Commodore 64 and all that?
Oh, yeah, and the arcade as well, yeah. And different revisions that have come out throughout the years. And, you know, we've taken inspiration from every single one of them and taken the stuff that we liked.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, at the end, we found out that our fondest memories were from the original.
Yeah. Now, speaking of the original, I understand Dan Gorlin, he was the programmer of the original Apple II version way back from 1982. He was brought on board as a consultant. Now, what type of contributions did Mr. Gorlin add to the game?
Well, like I mentioned, you know, we're all fans of the original game more than anything else. We wanted to make sure that we paid a lot of respect to the original. So we got Dan on board in order to make sure that we took the game that he was creating at the time and wanted to just kind of revise it and bring it into the modern audience. So we definitely brought him out to our Newport Beach office, sat with him, and just picked his brain as to everything he was trying to do with the original game.
Mm-hmm.
And make sure that the feelings and the emotions and the gameplay that he wanted was retained, as well as modern day gamers, what would they want?
Mm-hmm.
And try to incorporate the two into a nice mesh.
Now, did he ever see a beta or maybe the final build?
He did, actually.
Mm-hmm. And his reaction to that, did he have any, strong reaction one way? You know, did he like it? Did he have some suggestions for you guys?
Yeah, of course, you know, everybody who's worked on a product before is definitely has their emotions and how they feel about the game when anybody else touches it. He is definitely on board with the changes that we make. He's definitely had a lot of positive comments to make for the game that has shipped. But at the same time, I haven't had a chance to actually talk to him since it shipped because we've been so busy. Mm-hmm. I'd really love to sit with him again and just make sure that everything that we both tried to go for with his influence and our influence and make sure that we met together. So if there's anything that we missed, that we can make sure we pick up later on.
Okay. Awesome. Now, after playing your reboot, I noticed a couple of changes. So let's kind of talk about those. One, is it just me? Is it time, or are the physics much more forgiving these days? I didn't have any problems landing the copter. Neither did Sean.
Oh, well, in the original game, you know, it's a little different. One of the things that we didn't like from the original game that we wanted to make sure was different was you no longer have to lean forward or backwards in order to navigate throughout the map.
Mm-hmm.
You know, modern day players using the controller, you know, they're used to using the analog stick and they're used to pressing left or right. And with that, we changed the controls. But with that, we also felt that the helicopters needed to have some kind of weight. The helicopters needed to feel somewhat real.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a borderline simulation, but it's definitely an arcade.
Yeah, definitely. I'm sorry.
We wanted to make sure that the helicopters were fun to fly. That's one of the big things that Dan was very adamant about. It was that the helicopter itself, the very core mechanic of the game, needs to be fun.
That's cool.
Flying around the level is not fun. Then flying around the level shooting people and flying around the level doing this or flying around the level doing that, that's not going to be fun. It's never going to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of our goals.
Now, one of the more interesting additions, one of the things I liked, is the expression of just how dangerous rotor blades can be. I mean, they slice chickens and civilians equally well. How did you guys come upon adding that into Choplifter?
Well, if you know InXile, you know our humor.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of slapstick. It's a little demented. It's a little mixture of a bunch of other things that we just throw into the mix. If you've played our previous titles, such as Bard's Tale, even Demon Forge, you'll know where our humor comes from. And And seriously, anybody who flies a helicopter, in the back of their mind, they want to do these things. Mm-hmm. And we're giving the player a little bit of chance to have fun without going too crazy.
Right. Well, I think one of my favorite bits so far, as we talked about in this week's podcast, was I was flying along, and there's one of those kind of girders in the middle of the level. And I crashed into that accidentally because there was some heat, you know, some RPGs, some jets, you know, flying around. Crashed into that. One of my civilians just kind of fell out of the copter and started screaming wildly. And I thought that was pretty amusing. Now, enemies in this version attack on two different planes, which is, you know, fairly significant change from the original version. Why did the team feel the need to add that extra level onto the playing field?
One thing to note is that if you play the original game, mm-hmm. they do have tanks that come out from the other plane.
Oh, okay.
And you have to shoot forward and you have to shoot down to hit them. Mm-hmm. We just kind of exaggerated that gameplay. We brought that, expanded that gameplay, so it wasn't just a side-scroller. You know, somebody out there made a nice comment of it's not really 3D, it's 2.5D. Mm-hmm. I actually enjoyed that comment, and I think it is a good example of what we did, where the environment is definitely 3D, but you deal with combat in two different planes. But it also adds extra gameplay. Not only do you have to – you realize that not only do you have to deal with these people that are along your path, but all of a sudden people are introduced on the fly coming from the foreground, and now you have to deal with these people in a different manner. Mm-hmm. It also allowed us to rotate the helicopter and see the helicopter in a different way. It allowed us to get, you know, people will shoot projectiles at the screen because they're trying to shoot at you, and it's not just from left to right. And we felt that it was necessary for the game to take the next step. We needed to add more just to keep the combat alive and make sure that the player is constantly on their toes as they try to fight and save these people.
Cool. Now, one of the things I want to wrap things up with is I've heard some talk about DLC for the game. Can we talk a little bit about what's to come?
Well, understandably, you know, we want to try to keep a lot of things in secret. We want to try to keep people on their toes. We do have a very nice goodie coming for the fans of Choplifter very, very soon. We have a zombie pack. It's a whole new campaign filled with 5 levels and a mini game. And a couple other secret tidbits that I can't tell you about right now. But definitely, definitely stay tuned. This extra pack, I think, is going to push everybody over the edge on what they feel about this game.
Okay, so hold on for that. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Hiro. I really appreciate it.
And thank you very much.
Check out Choplifter HD. Naturally, you told me to take over in the end.
I did not. I said if I left, which I have clearly not done.
Okay.
But real quick, before we go into the rest of it, Sean, make sure that the outro says exactly how you would like me to say it, and I will read it exactly how you would like me to say it.
You have been given a great power. Do not abuse it.
I'm not going to abuse it. I want him to write. Sean has.
It's already pretty much done.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure. Anyway, we are back from that stunning, wonderful interview. Thank you, Deagle, for interviewing him.
Them. You're welcome.
Everything. We're going to move into trivia, which Deagle is going to take over for because he has all the trivia questions, and if I had them, then I would know all the answers, which I wish I did.
Okay, let's kick it off. Number one, when the Vita may garner, well, let me start over. While the Vita may garner attention next month, March will be a pivot point for the PSP as the system celebrates its 7th birthday. Thinking back to March 24, 2005, which of the following titles didn't flank the beloved Piano Black Portable at launch? So which one wasn't there at launch? A, Ape Escape on the Loose, B, Dynasty Warriors, C, Wipeout Pure, or D, Hotshots Golf Open T?
Dynasty Warriors?
I think Ape Escape.
And the correct answer, Hot Shots Golf, Open Tee.
Damn it.
That was the first
launch.
That was the first game I bought, so I just assumed it was there at launch.
I think me too. Maybe Luminous. Number two, in the United States, PSP purchasers got something their Japanese counterparts didn't. A preview UMD and a cleaning cloth. The first million buyers also got an additional goodie. Name it. A, a UMD copy of Spider-Man 2. B, a UMD copy of Bad Boys. C, a 32 megabyte memory card. Or D, a first edition slipcase. What was that bonus?
Ooh.
Well, mine came with a slipcase, so I'm going to say that one.
I know there were some bundles that had Spider-Man 2 and Bad Boys, but I also know that there were some bundles that had 32 megabyte in there. But
I feel like all of them came with the slipcase.
Answer.
I'm going to say the 32.
I think I'll agree with Sean and go slipcase.
Sean, slipcase?
Slipcase.
Okay, pretty tricky. Yes, they all came with a 32 megabyte memory card. They all came with a slipcase. What was the bonus?
Spider-Man
2.
Yes!
Oh,
okay.
You guys are all bad boys. Number three, speaking of the Universal Media Disc, just how much data can a dual-layer UMD hold? A, 0.8 gigabytes. B, 1.2 gigabytes. C, 1.8 gigabytes, or D, 2.75 gigabytes?
1.8.
Dual-layer UMD.
I think I'll go with 1.8, too. That's the only that's the highest I've seen any download title on PSN.
Yeah.
I'm going with the guys on this one.
Correct answer, 1.8. Good job.
But what? In the butt.
I would sing the rest of the song, but that might become suggestive and gross.
We'd have a good episode title, though.
No.
Digital downloads started growing in popularity in 2009. A number of titles remained UMD exclusive. Name the one which wasn't from the following list. Okay, so which one wasn't a UMD exclusive? Valkyrie Profile, Lynith, Lumines, Space Invaders Extreme, or Steambot Chronicles?
Steambot Chronicles.
Yeah, that's what I think, too.
What was the first and second ones?
Valkyrie Profile, Lynith, and Lumines.
Lynith. Oh, I'll wait until...
I'll go with the group.
You guys are all correct. Steambot Chronicles.
Yeah, Lenneth, I still think, is off the PSN, and that sucks because when I first got my PSN, my PSP, I had a great library, and then when I moved out here, I actually sold most of everything except for my Dreamcast, basically, to kind of afford, you know, my last month's rent and all that stuff, and I have not been able to find a cheap copy of Lenneth since then, and I never finished it.
I think I picked it up at Circuit City for $5.
You bum.
You should give it to Sean.
to be perfectly honest, I don't know that I'd replay it. It was good, but it wasn't. I don't think it was quite as great as everybody says it is. And that's the type of game that I'll lose my hair over because there's so many different endings that I wouldn't want.
Okay.
Right.
Number five. While the PSP has its share of popular titles, one game as far outpaced the rest, selling 4.6 million copies around the world. Name it. A, Monster Hunter Freedom 3. B, Grand Theft Auto Vice City Stories. C, Lumines. Or D, Crisis Core Final Fantasy VII.
I'm going to say... I want to say Monster Hunter, but I feel like it's Grand Theft Auto. I want to say Monster Hunter anyway.
I want to say Monster Hunter.
No, because that's only been released in Japan. So Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah,
so I'm going to say Monster Hunter.
I kind of think it's Grand Theft Auto as well. That seems like something that would sell pretty damn well.
One of you is correct. That would be Sage. Monster Hunter Freedom 3, two territories, Japan and Korea.
Really?
Wow.
Know your Monster Hunter, man.
I just remember seeing it.
What the fuck? I got that right and you didn't?
and you guessed Monster Hunter on top of it.
I just remember looking at the early numbers and thinking, wow, it's amazing what a great selling game in Japan is as opposed to the United States just because we have so many more people here. I never would have guessed that it got up to into the 4 million eventually.
Yep.
Good for you, Capcom. Wow. Bring that little bit over here.
That's two cheers for Capcom from Sean. One more and it'll be a Capcom cheering hat trick.
You mean a Capcom circle jerk?
Oh, Jesus. Well, I guess now we have to call the episode Circle Jerk.
Nope, we're going to call the episode...
What's the little Capcom, the little circular one-up symbol called? The little red and white thing? What is that called? Help me out, guys.
One-up capsule?
No, it has a name. You know what I'm talking about, Sean, right?
No, what are you talking
about? In 1942, you collect that little symbol. It's like the secret symbol. It's red and it's white and it's kind of yin-yang-ish. It's circular and it used to be in all the Capcom games, the old ones.
I don't remember. I just remember the little case that had Mega Man with the drill thing on it.
Okay. You guys are no help to me.
Why don't we call it Sage and her Circle of Jerks, and then it will be sort of implied that there's a circle jerkage.
We're going to call it Puppy Snuggles, and I'll tell you why when we finish the episode. Right.
I don't want to know.
Well, we can finish it out with Mailbag. We got a question from Jason 1.
Yes, you want to read these? Do you want me to read these?
Read them since I already started. What's the craziest thing you've ever done for a game or system? Wait in long lines, drive far, etc.
Oh, I have a good one.
Okay, let's hear it.
So, I used to live in Fort Collins, and I was coming home for the holidays, for the Christmas holidays. And back then, the Greyhound bus ran from Fort Collins to Santa Fe. It doesn't anymore because they closed our Greyhound station. And it was a really long ride. It was like 9 or so hours. It was all night long. And I really wanted to go to this rave house party that a friend of mine was having. It was like this house full of artists. There was a girl who was like a mathematician and a painter. So she had like painted all the walls in these crazy like symbols and diagrams. And
Did you say mathematician?
No, she was a mathematician.
Oh, I thought you said mathematician.
She studied lines.
No, she was a mathematician and an artist. She made really cool paintings. And there was this guy, James, who had his whole own DJ setup, and he would mix really good techno stuff. So decked out in, like, these giant green and black, like, the company trip pants and, like, this, you know, black fishnet shirt and giant boots and just totally looking raver-rific. I went to this house party they had, and it went until 4:35 in the morning, which was when I had to go catch my bus. So I ran to the bus with my bag of, like, you know, stuff for my trip home, got on the bus, sat on the bus the entire time, got home, had to wait like a few hours until it was going to be the midnight/morning release of the Wii, which I really wanted to get for my brother for a Christmas present because we have every Nintendo system that ever came out, including the Virtual Boy. So I thought, this will be really sweet because he didn't have a lot of money and I was going to get him the Wii for Christmas. So I went and stood in line, having not slept this entire time because I don't sleep that well on buses and while I'm traveling. I'd been up all night and then I'd been up, you know, when I got home and I went and got in line. And there's like not so many people waiting for the Wii, but there were like 30 nerdy boys waiting for the Wii and I'm dressed in a black fishnet shirt and goth makeup and giant boots and I had to fend them off for like 2.5 hours while I'm waiting for Best Buy to open and had to like fight one of them off for a number to get like, you know, because they passed out numbers and those people were going to get a Wii. And this one guy was like trying to grab it from me while he was flirting with me. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? You're going to flirt with me and then steal my number? Fuck you. That was pretty crazy.
Dirty
so
Nerdy is going to be the name of my band, by the way.
Dirty Nerdy. I like that.
Dirty Nerdy.
Oh, 30 Nerdy's better. How about the 30 Dirty Nerdy?
Yeah, it's too much.
Too much nerdy. Anyway, that was probably the craziest moment I ever had for a system, although it's not like the craziest thing. It was a crazy time for sure.
My story isn't nearly as crazy, and it didn't even happen to me. I kind of feel bad.
Oh, no.
Total lie.
My friend David, who lived down the street from me, he was like the biggest Sega fanboy. And I liked Sega too, but I just didn't have the money to be as into it as he was. And then right before the Dreamcast released, he was at a friend's house, and he was talking about, oh man, I'm excited about the Dreamcast, and the guy's like, oh man, I'm not gonna get one because I got burned because I bought a Sega Saturn and nothing good ever came out for it. Actually, I literally just threw it out before you got here. And he's like, seriously? And he's like, yeah, in that big dumpster out there, I just threw my Saturn out, I had a couple games for it, whatever, it was taking up space. So he went and jumped into the dumpster and fished it out.
My God.
It was a Saturn, and he had copies of Daytona USA, Mega Man X4, Mr. Bones, and...
Three Dirty Dwarves.
Yeah, something else. there were four games.
Those are terrible games.
No, they're not. Mega Man X4 for...
Bug 2.
No, Mega Man X4 for the Dreamcast is actually arguably the... it was Astral was the other one.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's arguably a superior version. But he actually jumped into the dumpster and fished it out, and then he gave me the Saturn because he already had one. And
sick.
So that's how I got my Saturn.
How were the cases? Because those Saturn cases.
No, you know what? For something that he pulled out of a dumpster, it looked amazing.
Oh.
Pristine. Yeah. Mr. Bones, also interesting game.
Yeah, not so good.
I've heard of it. I've heard it was all
right. Like a little skeleton that played guitar, right?
Dude, at the when it came out, that game looked so awesome.
I thought Astral.
Is it not awesome?
It's not now, but it was just one of those things that it was a, you know, for one of the early polygonal games, and the fact that they decided to make it a skeleton, and
pretty
skeletons
cool.
Looked really good in polygonal graphics back then.
Well, when I was a kid, back in the day, Thrifty carried games. This is probably the mid-80s when, the 2600 was dying. And they had a sale. I think it was $5, maybe even $10 for the original Mario Brothers for 2600. And I was a kid there. And I don't think I was allowed to. I was in some kind of trouble. I didn't want to ask for it because that would have got a no. And so I saved up my lunch money. Didn't eat lunch for, I don't know, like a week or two. And I remember calling the store, like, secretly, like, cupping the phone so my parents wouldn't hear to make sure that they had a copy. They put one on hold for me. I couldn't get down there. I didn't know how to ride the bus or anything. So I rode my bike, you know, one of those ones with, like, 20-inch wheels. So I rode that down. It's, like, freezing cold. This is in Northern California. And told my parents I was going to my friend's house. Rode my bike there. Picked up Mario Brothers. Paid them. Rode it all the way back. Okay? So I had it, like, in my pants, you know, came into the house. Slapped it in the 2600, and then I realized, because I was riding for so long, it was probably like a half hour, 45 minute bike ride. It was so cold, my hands could not move. So I grabbed the joystick, and I couldn't even play the damn game.
Oh,
45
shit.
Minutes. I tried wringing my hands under hot water, and that just made things worse. Yeah, it just felt like tingly, and I couldn't even, couldn't even...
Wow, that's harsh. But you did get the game, and you didn't eat for 2 weeks for it. That's pretty impressive.
Oh, I did that a lot. Like, when Donkey Kong came out, I was a skinny little fuck because I would never eat just so I could play Donkey Kong Jr. and practice that. So, I was a gaming anorexic long before school.
That's intense. That explains your appetite now.
Thanks. I made up for it.
For me, I didn't do anything quite as, like, dramatic as, like, you know, driving the bus or riding the bus after spending all night at a rave or anything, but I waited, like, 7.5 hours in line to get a 360 at launch.
That's a long time.
Wow.
Did it survive?
And that thing lasted 3.5 years.
Sweet.
That's not sweet. My Saturn still works.
Well, whatever. For an Xbox, that's pretty good.
The one from the dumpster?
Yes, the one from the dumpster.
Wow.
Dumpster and Saturn takes the cake.
I think the only other thing that I did that was really, like, crazy for a system was, and I'm still kicking myself for this to this day, I sold a shit ton of NES games to get it. I just, if it was expendable, it went to Funko Land. And I think I ended up trading everything in and getting a grand total of like $95 for towards a PlayStation 1, which was I think it was like $100. And my mom's like, here's the last $5 you need or whatever. But I'm still kicking myself for getting rid of those NES games. I got rid of like two of the three Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle games. It was just a laundry list of good NES games that I never, ever should have gotten rid of. And I'm still trying to track them down.
Yeah, NES games are pretty easy to come by, especially those Ninja Turtle games. They're not worth anything. They're just good. But yeah, my mom gave mine to my cousin. I was pretty upset about that.
Repo Man.
I feel like parents, that's like one of the douchiest things they can do, because even if they don't like your video game habit, there is something like sacred about the fact that you've like compiled this collection. It's important to you. And then they just toss it.
But I think at the time, the idea of collecting video games was kind of not, it wasn't quite as established, especially not for someone my age, you know, like,
right.
It was one of those things. I had a Genesis. My cousins didn't have anything.
Right.
Be a good cousin and let them have your old Nintendo.
That makes sense. I had a friend who was in high school. I mean, he was a senior, so this isn't, like, you know, so long ago, and it was definitely past the point when people understood that, like, they're even high schoolers might be into video games, legitimately. And his dad, I think just because he felt like it and was sort of, like, grumped out that his son had all these games, gave away, like, his Xbox, his PlayStation, every game he had, including, like, some, like, collectible games he had, like, for other systems. I mean, he just gave all of it away one day while he was at school, and he got home and was like, what the fuck? And it was, like, he was devastated, and I was like, that's so douchey. That's the worst thing ever.
Well, that was, like, that news article last year. It's, like, that news article last year that somebody put a Xbox on Craigslist for $5, and the whole thing was about how his son was bad and whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
That son should have called one of his friends and been like, dude, buy this back for me. I swear to God, I'll pay you so much money.
But I had one more story, though. I might have already told this story, though, but I was at the PX, which is like the Army version of Walmart, and it was right before my birthday, and my Final Fantasy VIII had just come out, and I mean, I didn't have anything to do, so I just went to the PX to look at it, and I didn't want to buy it because, A, I didn't have any money, and, B, my birthday was coming up, so somebody might buy this game. So I'm at the PX. I go look at it. I pine over it. I'm getting ready to leave, and I just find somebody dropped a $50 bill. And so I ran out to the payphone.
Oh.
I called my dad up, and I said, hey, Dad, did you get me Final Fantasy VIII for my birthday? And Dad is like, no, you know, I tried to find it, but couldn't find it anywhere. And I was like, okay, because I just found $50. I'm going to buy it right now. And he's like, okay, I bought it for your birthday, but you can't have it till then. So then I went back inside, and I bought Brave Fencer Musashi because it came with a Final Fantasy VIII demo disc.
Oh, yeah, I have one
and
of those.
And it turns out that game was much better than Final Fantasy VIII.
No. Well, at least you got a good game out of it.
Yes.
Sweet.
Second
well,
question.
Yep.
We got a question from Drunk Yoshi. Question for the show. What types of things do you avoid doing when you write? Anything you watch out for?
Like write anything or write reviews?
I think they're specifically talking about reviews.
Okay. Because when I write poetry, I try real hard not to cry too much on the paper. So that makes it foggy.
That's still the goth thing. Still didn't
use that. I'm goth on the inside.
Do you want to come over and listen to my Evanescence albums?
No.
No, I don't.
I bet you say that to all the girls, Blue.
Stop stealing my Nintendo numbers, Blue.
Sean, anything?
I try not to use the same word over and over again.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
I try, you know what, just thinking about that, I've been reading Joystick for the last week or so, and maybe they've kind of declined in quality a little bit since their writing staff left, but their first paragraph is kind of a throwaway, like you can skip that and you still get the gist and
well,
probably better off not reading that.
Well, that's this whole after the jump mentality. I'm so glad we don't do that, but yeah, that is a practice.
Oh, I was going to tell you, we're going to do that next week. No, I'm kidding.
What?
No, I've been looking at my writing a little bit more carefully, thinking, okay, is this, could I remove this, and would it make for a better piece?
I always try to research while I'm writing, too, because I think that you can never give too much background. I mean, obviously, you don't want it to be too wordy, but I always like to give people some information about what they're reading.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it makes me happy when, well, a publisher says that we really understood the game and maybe some other site didn't, which I got this week. Made me beam.
I think I try to make it my own voice without, I mean, like the other guys said, I try and clean it up and make it, you know, nice. But I like to try and give relevant but maybe a different slant on things, like so that if other places are reviewing it, maybe someone who's reading my review doesn't get all the same information, which goes along with using my own voice. And I try really hard not to start writing until I've actually played the game for, like, I know some people start the game, not, I don't think any of us does this, but, like, some reviewers start the game, and then they immediately start, like, writing, critiquing, and I feel like it's not wholesome enough, it's a little too fragmented, so it makes more sense to me to get more of a sense of the bigger picture of the game mechanics, the game storyline, like, how it flows. So I might take brief notes if something, like, tickles my fancy, but I try and play for at least, you know, 2 or 3 hours before I start planning on what I'm going to be writing. Like, I just play the game to play the game, and then I start thinking about, okay, as I'm reviewing this, what do I want to say about it?
Yeah, whenever I'm playing something, I always have my tablet open, writing notes down as well. My biggest thing is trying to...
Tell me about your tablet. No, I'm kidding.
No.
Well, it is a wonderful... never mind. With me, I think the biggest thing is attention span. It's easy to get distracted, you know, when you're playing one thing and say, you know, like Christmas comes along and then you get something else and then you go off and play that and then you get something else and you play that too. It's like, my 2012 New Year's resolution is to get my gaming attention span under control so I can, like, sit down and focus on one thing and not touch anything else until I'm done with it or reasonably close to being done with it.
Yeah, this show does make doing that very difficult because I do feel pressure to play something new every week.
Right. Mm-hmm. I feel like I can't finish games. I mean, I feel like the ones that I'm going to review, I do end up finishing, but I feel like the ones that we talk about, I often end up needing to talk about them without having finished them, which I like to try and make clear because I don't want to misrepresent the game. But I do think that that is hard because sometimes games can surprise you at the end, or maybe you don't always get the best sense of flow for them. But sometimes it gives you enough of a good idea to be able to, like, mention them. Like, I got – oh, this was another update. I got someone playing Demon's Souls over the break by recommending it to them, and now they're, like, addicted to it. They had never heard of it. They had never, like, they didn't know anything about it, and now that's all they play. I mean, for now, they're going to go back to other games soon. But I think that it's nice to, the one nice thing is that you get a lot under your belt that you can then be like, well, you know, I didn't finish it, but, like, this game seemed really cool, and maybe you'd like it.
There's the possibility that when you get somebody else interested in it and they start talking about it, it gives you the inspiration to go back and play it and finish it yourself, too.
That's true. Although, Blue, I don't think I have as much of your, like you had mentioned earlier, the putting down games and not coming back to them. The games that I really like, I go back to fairly often. And the backlog games get played enough for me to get a sense of if I like it. Because at this point, having done the show for a while, I've gotten pretty good at knowing if I don't really like a game that much. So I do tend to play games sort of to their fruition if I like them, and I end up playing them, you know, repeatedly if it's a game that I really like.
Yeah, another thing, this goes back to us not finishing stuff and losing our attention span. Another thing I was talking to that same coworker about was he thinks that the days of the 30-hour game aren't coming to an end, but you're going to see a lot less of them. Because the reason you have those long games is, you know, to keep people from returning them. Because you got to remember, in Japan, there aren't rentals. It's just people buy a game, finish it, and then return it. So you make it longer so that at least takes them 30 days to beat it so they don't get the full price back.
That's
but with
sensible.
With downloadable games, you don't have that problem because you can't return them and you can't trade them in. So that's why you'll see such short games on the iPhone, because, you know, people are going to spend 99 cents on it, people with a shorter attention span aren't going to be intimidated by, you know, 30 hours of gameplay. And, you know, you can't return it. So you make your dollar and you're fine. And you don't have to add all this gratuitous content to make it, to sort of pad it out. And that's sort of the future. As games become download only, they'll become more focused experiences. So you're not going to have the $60, you know, 80-hour epic. I mean, you'll still have those, but every game won't have to be that. You know, you'll have more, you know, 5 to 8 hour games, because that's kind of the attention span people are willing to give a new game now, which I think
that's already
that makes sense.
It is for many single player.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily think, I mean, I think spending $60 on that is still an issue, but I feel like as more and more, we move more and more towards downloadable stuff, I think that's going to be more the case. Like, that is, I think in reviews, people are like, I can't believe this game's only 5 hours long. Modern Warfare's campaign's only 5 hours long. Well, if you only paid $20 for that, would that really be so bad? That's like a pair of movie tickets.
Well, yeah. And the other thing with that is that it's, there are more adults who play games now than when video games were first invented. So grown-ups do have a life. Like, kids can sit at home and play a video game all day during the summer when they're not in school. You don't have a lot of homework when you're in, like, you know, elementary, middle school. But as you get older, you have to go to work, you have to make money, you have to, you know, pay for your life. So it makes sense to have games that are maybe not all 50 hours long, because then people would get bored and be like, dude, I just want to beat a fucking game without it taking me half a year because I don't have enough time to sit down and really play it.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's with Persona 3 Portable, I think that thing has the content of both the vanilla Persona 3 and Persona 3 Fest altogether, and I think it also has like a second special campaign for if you play the female main character.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, that thing's, I mean, when you get it up, like, 70 hours or more, 70, 100 hours, something like that, to finish a game, it's, I mean, how are you supposed to beat that in a timely manner? It's like, it's going to take you so long to get through it that you're probably going to forget, you know, some details along the way that you look back on and you're like, hey, that was actually something really important and I completely forgot about it. You know, it's hard to... I guess keep the canon straight when you have a game that's that long.
Well, Once upon a time, you took notes. I mean, when like games like Myst and stuff came out, people took notes in notebooks and kept them. Or like you'd write down passwords in notebooks. I mean, once upon a time, that was sort of more normal because you were going to get a lot of information that was going to come up later. And the point was supposed to be that it was somewhat challenging. So you had to like figure out a method for remembering whether it was writing it down or like hiding it somewhere or whatever.
And like making maps in for Castlevania and Metroid and stuff like that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which I kind of miss. I kind of miss that interactivity between. I mean, Odyssey. I don't want play what?
Etrian Odyssey.
Yes.
Hey, you're still making maps.
Or Wizardry.
Yeah. Well, that's right. No, don't play. On second thought, don't play Wizardry.
Yeah. I was gonna say too. Have you guys ever played an 80-hour RPG and beat it, and then at the end thought, wow, this ending sure was worth
no,
that happens more often than not now, and that pisses me off. But no, I'm really struggling to think of a long game that had an ending that made the entire journey
even Grandia 2. I mean, depending on your sense of humor, Grandia 2 was either amusing or sort of disappointing, and I think Grandia 2 is one of the best RPGs ever, but even that ending was a little like, what?
I remember beating it, but I don't. I mean, obviously, it didn't leave an impression on me, but I don't remember.
It involved a spaceship.
I vaguely remember that. I mean, the only ending I can really think of. I mean, this wasn't. I guess this might just be because it wasn't terribly long. Mega Man Legends 2 ending stuck with me because it bothered me.
Yeah, but that's the disappointing thing is when it sticks with you because it was like, wait, what? That was crap.
Mm-hmm. I think one mediocre, I guess you wouldn't call it mediocre ending, but one ending that never really hit me quite as hard as it probably should have was probably for the ending of Twilight Princess. It's like you have the boss battle with Ganon, and then I think you run off into Hyrule with Zelda, and then he catches up with you, and you're basically ending up sparring with him in like a flaming circle just on a random hillside, outside of the Hyrule Castle or something like that, and that felt somewhat anticlimactic.
Yeah, well, and I also wanted to say I wasn't talking specifically about final boss fights either, but it always seems like after that final boss, wrapping up a game like that, when you've spent that much time, it should be meaningful, and I've never had that experience.
For me, Phantom Brave.
Yeah, see, I never played through Phantom Brave.
Anyway,
yep.
We have now come to the wind down phase, so I hope you've enjoyed your time with us tonight, as always. If you would like to compliment your listening to us with a bit of reading, might I suggest checking out techgaming.com for the latest reviews, editorials, and weekly new releases, not to mention incredible cover art for our podcasts on our website. Also, if you'd like our opinions on gaming and basically anything else, you can follow us on Twitter. Robert Allen is @tech_gaming. Sean Kirkland is @SeanNola, 2 N's in the middle there. Sage Morris Green, that's me, is @SamuRage with a U in the middle. And Aaron Boo is @BlueSwim. Subscribe to us on iTunes, New Link, New Art, the RSS feed. That's everything we've got on there. Make sure that you are on the right RSS feed because there are two. One is archives, one is more recent stuff. If you're not hearing this new stuff, then you're probably on the wrong one. If you want to keep up to date on the happenings on tech gaming in general, make sure to like us on Facebook. You will see when we have posted new reviews. You will see when we have got new information on the latest in tech and gaming, that being our name and all. And you can just chat with us on Facebook, since that's the way.
Do we have a Google Plus page?
No.
We do not.
We do not.
See,
we're not there
yet. I really like, if you're not hearing this, you're probably on the wrong feed.
Yeah, man, it's clever, Steve. It's funny.
I dug that.
Also, don't forget to check out our Counter-Strike group on Facebook.
Is that serious?
No.
If you go to facebook.com/techgaming, comes up with a hold on, I'm trying to remember what country they're from again. Were they Czech? No, they're not Czech. I don't know. They're from some country.
Swiss?
No, they're not Swiss. I don't
know. Anyway, there's a group with Tech Gaming that is a There are others that might have our names on things. Like, there's a Samurage in Russia who is definitely not me, and I'm sorry that I took her name. I didn't mean to. She's got, like, a Russian MySpace page. But that's all the news that's fit to print, and I'm pretty sure I heard someone's stomach growl, which means it's time for dinner and time for us to go.
All right.
Ta-ta, everyone. Much love. That was too
easy. Peace.
Ducks are in the lead. What?
The Mighty Ducks?
The Mighty Ducks of Anaheim.